Okay, good morning again. Come on in, Peggy. Come on in, everyone, and adjust your seats as needed because we obviously have some challenging logistics this morning. Lord willing, we will finish the Bible survey next week. And as part of that last lesson, I thought we'd focused a little bit on an idea, a concept that you may have heard from others, mountaintops of faith. When we reflect back over the Bible, what are the most significant? I mean, there's thousands of significant things that happen, but in your mind, what would be the most significant? What really stands out? And we'll have something to say about that. I may even send out an email this week. But one that would be on my list, and I need to mention it now, is the resurrection of Jesus. Because as we study this morning, I want you to reflect on how the resurrection of Jesus has impacted some men of the New Testament. Today, we're going to look at the books of Hebrews, James, 1st and 2nd Peter, and Jude. And with the exception of Hebrews, since Hebrews is a book that's very difficult to find an author for, the others clearly were impacted by Jesus. And that's something I hope to point out. You'll see in the material on pages 46 and 47 that there's some very good information there about the summaries of the books and what's included. And I hope my comments will sort of add to that just a little bit. So let's begin with Peter. Now, when you think of Peter, we've got to go back to Gospels. And actually, let's go to the first chapter of the book of Acts. In Acts 1, please. We're going to look at several verses here real quick in a rapid fire. And really what I'm looking for is the difference that might be in some of these passages. In Acts 1, the apostles and disciples as well are in Jerusalem. Jesus has told them to stay put, wait for something to happen. And they're doing that. And picking up in verse 12, when they returned to Jerusalem from the mount called Olivet, which is near Jerusalem, a Sabbath day's journey away, and they had entered the city, they went up to the upper room where they were staying. That is Peter and John, James, Andrew, Philip and Thomas, Bartholomew and Matthew, James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon the Zealot, and Judas the son of James. Who are those people? Those are the apostles. How many of them are there? There are 11. Okay, and so the notable difference is someone's missing. Who's missing? Judas. Okay, and that, you know, fits the Gospels. There's a natural segue, if you will, from the Gospels into Acts. Judas has done his thing, and to make matters worse, after he betrays the Lord, he goes and he hangs himself. So, probably the best example of taking a bad situation and actually making it so much worse. Okay, now. The point is, there are 11 men mentioned here. I want to compare that to a few other gospel verses that give us the same names. And this is my challenge to you right now, is look for differences. So look back again at verse 13. The names there. Just focus on that real quickly. Now I want you to turn to, let's go to Matthew 10, please. So hold Matthew 10. If you can divide your Bible into two places, Matthew 10, and have the Acts passage as well. I want to read this quickly. And then my question to you is, what's different about these two lists other than Judas? Now, the names of the 12 apostles are these, verse 2 of Matthew 10. The first, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, and James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, Philip, and Bartholomew, Thomas, and Matthew, the tax collector, James, the son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus, Simon, the zealot, and Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him, verse 4. Do you notice any differences? Yeah? Okay, there's one difference. Is sometimes you'll hear another name. Oh, no, the Bible. And Bible critics will just run with that. Say, see, there you go. You have a Bible. You have a book that's not believable because the name changes. Well, until you step back and you realize that sometimes proper names are given, sometimes nicknames are given or common names. And so it's not very difficult to show that to be a practice in the Bible. Because the Bible is written, the Bible was written in language that was read and understood by the everyday man. So it's not intended to be some super high level, you know, difficult to understand document. Okay, so that's easy to dismiss. Any other differences?
The order.
What about the order, Sean? What about the order?
So, like, you typically have for Peter, Andrew, James, John, but this one goes Peter, James, John, Andrew, that kind of thing.
If I ask you this morning, okay, stand up. Or maybe you don't stand up, but recite. Okay, Tom, I want you to give us the names of the apostles. I don't know Tom that well, but Tom would have said Peter, Andrew, James, John. Wouldn't you, Tom? Yeah, and Peggy's shaking her head, so she knows. Okay, and you would have too. That's not the order that was given in the book of Acts. And you say, well, that's trivial. Of course it's trivial, but it's there. Who was Andrew? Peter's brother. In fact, if you go to John, the first chapter, and now we're looking at verses 40 through 51, Andrew is the first one mentioned. Andrew's the one that went and got who? Peter. So I find it so intriguing that the Bible sometimes gives us this nuance, and sometimes the Bible gives us this nuance. Sometimes it changes a little bit. Look at Mark 3. Mark 3, please. Again, this is where the apostles are named, but we have a little more information in Mark, the third chapter. Mark 3, beginning in verse 13. And he, that's Jesus, went up to the mountain and summoned those whom he himself wanted. And they came to him, and he appointed 12 so that they would be with him and he could send them out to preach and have authority to cast out demons. So there's a purpose right there. Jesus has a purpose for 12 men. He had more than 12 people that followed him. At times there were thousands. We know that. There were times when he fed thousands of people. But then there were maybe more of the time. There was a smaller group. But there were certainly more than 12. And of that group, he picks 12. And so you see, and he appointed the 12, verse 16, Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter, and James, the son of Zebedee, and John, the brother of James, to him he gave the name Boanerges, Boanerges, which means sons of thunder. Interesting that Jesus would assign names, and when they assigned names, there was meaning behind it. And Andrew, and Philip, and Bartholomew, and Matthew, and Thomas, and James, the son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus, and Simon the Zealot. Okay, so just each of these passages has a lot of commonality with the others, but there are some differences. And I just want you to reflect on that for a moment, that there are differences. But the differences, is it fair to say, don't matter? The differences aren't substantive. That is, they don't challenge our faith. Oh no, Andrew's in the wrong order. Okay, he's in a different order. All right, now, transition a little bit. We're going to talk about Peter in a minute. When you think of Peter, what do you think of? And by the way, Peter is always the first. Pardon me?
A strong personality.
Well, that's an understatement. Strong personality. Who's the first to speak up? Peter. Always. Pete, well, be careful. Never say never, never say oh. Most of the time, it's Peter. Who was the one of the transfiguration that had a recommendation on what? Hey, Lord, this is what we should do. That was Peter. Who was the one that had the faith to get out of the boat and walk on the water with Jesus? It was Peter. It wasn't his colleagues. It wasn't the other apostles. Now, we may be quick to point out, yeah, in his weak faith. Folks, you wouldn't have got out of the boat. And I wouldn't have. It's Peter. What other examples do you think of Peter which show this strong personality?
Well, he did draw the sword, and he swung.
in the garden. He's the one that says, this isn't going to happen. This is an apostle of Jesus who pulls his sword out and cuts off someone's ear. He's a passive type guy, isn't he? No, he's not a passive type guy. He's chosen by our Lord, who made the confession in Matthew 6 about who Jesus is. It was Peter. It's always Peter. And he failed miserably at the trial of Jesus. That same passage, it refers, it's just a few verses later. The same part of the gospel talks about him cutting off the servant's ear. Just read on a little bit farther, and you're gonna find out that that's when he denied the Lord three times. Okay, now the others had already run. I'm not saying that Peter was worse than they are, but you get the two extremes of this guy. How about the last part of the book of John? I find this interesting. Look at the very last section of the book of John. When Peter is having a discussion with the Lord about their futures. Okay, so picking up in verse 18, I'm in John 21, verse 18. Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were younger, you used to gird... By the way, we should back up to verse 17. Get the whole thing. You go all the way back to verse 15, where Jesus says, Simon Peter, do you love me? And, you know, there's this back and forth. Yeah, I love you. Okay, do you love me? Do you back and forth. And Peter seems to almost be in this... I'm not saying he's debating with the Lord, but he's certainly challenging the Lord. He has some questions, and he wants his questions answered. Yeah, what about this guy, Lord? What about this disciple? And most people say he's referring to the Apostle John. It doesn't matter. But he has a question, and he wants that question answered. And the Spirit felt it helpful to you and me to include that in Scripture to hear this dialogue between Jesus and Peter. And it's in this dialogue that we see Jesus' plan for Peter as his ambassador. Now, here's where I want to reflect on what I said a minute ago. You think about the Peter before and the Peter after. He was a younger man, much younger man in the Gospels. Some say 20. I don't know if he was 20 or 30, but he was younger. And then if the date of 1 Peter is even close around early 60s, you know, it's some time's passed. He's now an older man. He identifies himself in 1 Peter 5 as an elder. So he's not a novice. If you harmonize that passage with the other passages that talk about shepherding and eldering. He's not a novice. And he seems to have found the peace and the resolve and the dedication. In fact, if you look back at the book of Acts, who's mentioned in Acts 2? I just answered my question. Peter and the others. He wasn't the only one preaching. He wasn't the only one preaching at Pentecost. He was one. And his words are recorded for you and me. But if you flip just to the next chapter, and the next chapter, chapter 3, chapter 4, chapter 5. I mean, he's getting hauled into the council, and he's not running afraid. He is confident. He is. He's still got that strong character. I mean, he's an in-your-face type guy. But now he's got that focus. He's got that dedication. And with that, we can start looking at some of what he's written in the first and second Peter. Okay, remember, these are general epistles. The difference between these epistles that we're talking about today and the Pauline epistles are simply the Pauline epistles were written by Paul to some group. These are written by a man like Peter, and they have maybe a broader distribution. They're not written to a single individual like Philemon. They're not written to even a church like Colossians or you know, Philippians or something like that. In fact, if you look at, and now we are in the books of 1 and 2 Peter. I've got to find that. Notice how he introduces his book. Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to those who reside as what? As what? As what? Exiles? Aliens? Pilgrims? You're not home, folks. You're not at home. If you are, then maybe things aren't right between you and the Lord. This place that we live has got to be always a little bit uncomfortable. Just a little bit. Okay, I don't want to, you know, overstate this, but nor do I want to understate this, because sometimes I feel that Christians, our biggest challenge is this world is great. This world is just wonderful, and everything is just coming together. Okay. But he writes to this group of aliens, and now he notices, by the way, notice where he specifically mentions those that are scattered throughout Pontus and Galatia and Cappadocia and Asia and Bithynia. Where is that? Where are those areas? Those areas are smaller areas of what? We would call it Turkey today, or Asia. Still Asia. Turkey, I guess, is in Asia. Okay, so that's what he's writing. And he's writing about holiness. And he makes the point about God being holy. And we should be like God. That's, you know, the first chapter. And he talks about the hope that we have. Now, the context of this book is suffering. I don't believe it's a book about suffering. I believe it's a book about overcoming suffering. You're going to suffer. Christians, aliens, pilgrims, to use those other terms. We are going to suffer from time to time. And I believe this book specifically mentions suffering that's from outside in. Those outside and how they're going to treat you because you are and should be different. And there's a way of dealing with that. And that's really the book of 1 Peter. And there's a stability. There's a wisdom in how Peter writes. Excuse me. Now, we can't read tone. I understand that. You can't see tone. No, sometimes the translators have given us punctuations to help us with what they believe to be the tone of certain things. Even sometimes when Jesus says something, some think it's with, you know, it's in a derogatory way, and other ways it's, you know, with a firmness. We don't know that because punctuation didn't come with the original text. That's just the way it is. But there just seems to be a calmness and a resolve by Peter in his first book. I find it interesting in talking about the Gentiles, and hey, what do the Gentiles think when they look at you? They better see something different. If they don't see something different, then there's a problem of some kind. Talks about just how we treat each other. Chapter 3 about wives and husbands, and particularly wives, if you're dealing with a husband that may not agree with you. That's got to be challenging, folks. Well, fortunately, Peter says, get out, run, leave. No, he doesn't. He says, deal with that situation. And then here's how you deal with it in a kind and peaceful way. There's a way, wives, and this is applicable to the husbands as well. There's a way of dealing with a mate that is making your life difficult. And one another, submitting to others in chapter 2 about, you know, the authorities, okay? I didn't vote for the man that's in office now. I think he's making a lot of mistakes. He's still my president. I pray for him. I told somebody yesterday, I think he will take the blame for a lot of things that he had nothing to do with. That's really beside the point. It doesn't matter. It is in the position. But whether it's our relationship to authority, our relationship within the family, our relationship to one another at a local congregation, there's a way to act. There's a way to act. And Peter gives us that insight on this is how you live godly. Love, chapter 4. Chapter 5, I find it interesting that it's not a, oops, somebody's got to say something about eldering and shepherding, because nobody's talked about that for a while. Let's just slide it in here. I don't believe that for a minute. I believe chapter 5 begins with talking about shepherds because of the suffering that they were dealing with as Christians. If Billy and I can't help you in your service, then please ask us to step aside. Please. We're here to help you. We're here in some way to find out what you need and what we can do to help you in your quest and your journey as Christians. We're not here to figure out the building. Okay. You're preaching there. The second book, Peter. Now, this is a shift, because 2 Peter is more of a book about internal issues. What happens, and I really want to focus on chapter 2. What happens when you have false teaching within you, among you? We're not worried about the outsiders anymore. We're talking about closer. And chapter 2 is just graphic. Chapter 2 is challenging because it talks about how God has dealt with those that contradict and challenge his way of our living. Chapter 2 is just, wow, it's all about judgment. It's powerful. But before he gets into that, he says, this is how I want you to live. Look at chapter 1. For this very reason, applying all diligence, verse 5, to begin with, add these things. And when you see things like in your diligence, faith, moral excellence, knowledge, self-control, perseverance, godliness, brotherly kindness, and love, you don't see that in the next chapter, because these people who are called false prophets in the next, or false teachers in the next chapter, they don't act like that. They don't have your best interest. They don't have those qualities that we mentioned in chapter 1. And then Peter also, in the third chapter, reminds us. First of all, he reminds us that it's okay to be reminded. I take that to heart, because here we've been spending the last almost 6 months now talking about a Bible survey. And I doubt really we've touched on a lot of new things for you. Well, even in the extreme situation, if we didn't cover a single new idea for you, Peter says in chapter 3, it's okay to be reminded of what you already know. So I use him. Okay, I use him as an example. But he closes out the book with a reminder that it's not all over. It's not all over. Jesus will return. And there's some details there about how the world and everything that we know, this place we called home, is going to be dissolved with heat. I mean, it's gonna be gone. It's annihilated. Everything that you can look around and see is gone, because God said so. But you and I live on in our resurrected bodies, and that's what we have about Peter. Now, that's Peter. I want to shift to talk about the other two epistles. And what's interesting about James and Jude is they're brothers. They're half-brothers to Jesus. And you say, wait a minute, I thought James was an apostle. That James died, and he was killed by Herod in Acts 12. So it's really kind of hard to believe that it's that James. By the way, I should also say this. In Galatians 1 and verse 19, when Paul refers to interacting with other Christians, he uses the word apostles with James. But you say, well, Rod, then that contradicts what you just said. No, because here's the rub. The Bible oftentimes uses the word apostle for simply a messenger. You know how I can show you that? The simplest way is in Philippians 2 and verse 25. Someone turn there and read that for me real quick, please. Philippians 2, 25. I know I'm taking it entirely out of context, but the only thing we're trying to point out here is the word apostle sometimes means different things. Someone? Anyone?
I thought it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother and fellow worker and fellow soldier, and your messenger and minister to my need.
And your messenger and minister. Okay, that word messenger there, if you go back and you start doing some study, you'll find that's the basic root word that is oftentimes used as apostle. It is referred. Barnabas is called an apostle in the book of Acts. So there are other examples. Now, I say that kind of as a segue because I want to talk about brothers. Are you a brother to Jesus?
Yes.
Folks, why are we stone-faced this morning? Please do something when I ask you. Yes, you're a brother to Jesus. Are you a brother to Judas, to Jude and to James? As a spiritual brother, you are. As a fleshly brother, are you? No, you're not. Okay, so you say, what's the point? Well, again, I want to go back to the Gospels. I want to show you a few things. First of all, let's start with the most powerful of any of these next few verses, John, the 7th chapter and verse 5. John 7 and verse 5, please. Someone read that, please. So not even his brothers believed in him. Now, this one is one where a little bit of context may be helpful because some have argued that, well, they weren't saying they just totally didn't believe him, but they weren't understanding why he said, it's not time for me to go up to Jerusalem just yet. Okay, but the point is, there was something about Jesus that his brothers didn't totally buy into just yet. Now, let's look at a few other verses. Matthew 13, please. Matthew 13. Verses 55, I believe, is where we're going to start. Well, let's begin in verse 53. When Jesus had finished these parables, he departed from there. He came to his hometown. Okay, that's key. He came to his hometown and began teaching them in their synagogue. And they were astonished and said, where did he get so smart? I paraphrase. Where did this man get this wisdom and these miraculous powers? Isn't this... who? Isn't this the carpenter's son? That's a reference to Joseph. Isn't this Joseph's son? Is not his mother called Mary and his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas? Okay, I believe and others believe, not everybody, but others believe that the book of James is written by the two of the men that are mentioned by name in that passage. You could also find something like that in Mark 6 and verse 3. Now, let's look at Matthew 12. Since we're in Matthew, let's go to Matthew 12 and verse 46. Now, this is a text that reminds us that be careful when you use words, what the words mean. Verse 46, beginning Matthew. While he was still speaking to the crowds, behold, his mother and brothers were standing outside seeking to speak to him. Now, if you didn't have any other information, who is he referring to, mothers and brothers?
His mother and
his brothers. Folks, you take the obvious, unless there is something that tells you it's not the obvious. Now, this passage is going to mix things up a little bit. Let's keep reading. Someone says to him, verse 47, behold, your mother and your brothers are standing outside to speak to him, to speak to you. Now, Jesus answers, interesting, in verse 48, he says, Jesus answered the one who was telling him and said, and who is my mother and who are my brothers? Oh, Jesus had amnesia. He didn't know who they were referring to. Right? He knew exactly who they were referring to. And he goes on to explain. And stretching out his hand towards his disciples, he said, "Behold, my mothers and my brothers." Okay, so there are mothers and brothers, and then there are mothers and brothers. Okay, so I'm just telling you, get used to the fact, and we do that all the time. We do that all the time in common everyday language. But when we go to the Bible, all of a sudden, oh, it's got to be entirely clear. Well, it is clear here. And I remind you again that whenever you're looking at a passage, you start with, you take it as literal unless something tells you it's not. Genesis, day one, day two, day three, day four. Are those actual days or not? You start with the premise those are actual days. And then you harmonize that with other passages to either prove or to disprove that premise. And that sounds real. Ooh. That's what you do all day long in how we interact and as people. Okay, now, so we know who James isn't, right? I mean, that is, he's not the James of Acts 12. And there are other James, and as your lesson material here points out some of the verses where he is referenced. I mentioned Galatians 1 and 19. That's where he is referred to in the same context as apostle. But we've made the point several times in this series of studies that it doesn't matter. But look at the book of James. Hold that just for a second. I want to actually stop that sentence midway. In this case, it does, because the title is the title, but the text is the text. In verse 1, like Peter, the author is also identified as part of the text. So you take that with the other text, okay? That's my point. What did James talk about? What did James talk about? What was the purpose of his letter? Anyone?
Well, it's everyday Christianity, but it starts, he sets it up with trials and tribulations, and it kind of has a domino effect to life, and then they'll kind of circle back to those principles again, but we call it practical Christianity.
Yeah, practical Christianity. In fact, I found it interesting because Fontenot doesn't typically make statements like this unless he feels pretty strongly about it. But in your content, you can tell him I said that, by the way, Joel. But in the lesson material, he says this is probably the most practical book in the Bible. Wow. Now, folks, that's a challenging statement to make. But I think it's exactly as he said, and Sean just said as well. And your studies, I'm sure, have proven the same thing. It is an extremely practical book. That doesn't mean other books aren't practical. They are. But it seems to start kind of just right in there and about how do we live. You know something else about the book of James? Many times people remove it from their Bible. Ever heard of somebody taking a little penknife? This is humorous and it's sad that people will go into the book, into their Bible, and they'll cut out James 2. Because there's some real challenging verses in James 2 that talk about faith and works, and we don't like that. And so if you don't like something, what do? You just get rid of it. Okay? Now, Sydney's back there smiling because she thinks, how juvenile. Yes. But that's what people will do, folks. Or they wouldn't go so far as to cut it out of their Bible because who might see that? You know? And if you see that, then you can explain, well, what happened to you? What happened to that passage? Well, I didn't like it, so I cut it out. I mean, that's kind of self-incriminating, right? But they do it in their mind all the time. Many have challenged the canonicity. Big word. All that means is it part of God's word? They've challenged that with James because they don't like what it has to say. But rather than not liking what it has to say, why don't you sit down and reconcile it with what other parts of the Bible have to say? And then it all makes sense. Because if you try to compare faith and works in James 2 with faith and works in Romans, you're going to get headache. Because they're emphasizing different aspects of those words. Now, here's the point. God expects you and me to figure that out. God expects you and me to study our Bibles. And as Paul told the Ephesians, you can read this and you can understand it. You don't need a priest to answer this for you. You don't need somebody else to pull you aside. No, does it help to have other people study? Yeah. Why do you think we have Sean? Because we love Jordan. Why do we have Sean? We ask him as his livelihood, get in the book and study and share what you believe. Share what you have learned and then repeat that to us so that we might consider it. Pardon me the graphic way I'm doing this, okay? As an evangelist, as a minister, he's not there to set North Collin doctrine. Have you thought about that? That's not his purpose. His purpose is study for Sean. And when he studies, he's going to share. And then you take what he shares and you compare that with what you study. And then you come to your own conclusions. Now, having said all that, please don't misunderstand. I think he's invaluable. I think Jordan is more invaluable. You know what I mean by all this, okay? That's how this works. And so, will some people cut out certain sections of their Bible? Yeah, they'll do that. And other people may say, well, whatever Sean says is good enough for me. Shame on you. Shame on you if you think that. Sean's not going to stand beside your side. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 10 says, Sean ain't there. It says, you're going to stand at the judgment seat of Christ, and he won't be there. Now, can he help you? Absolutely. And he does help you. Absolutely. And that's what we're all about. That's what we're in this together. Okay. A little preachy here, Rod. All right. 1 minute? Jude. What makes the book of Jude, again, another half-brother. Sometimes he's called Judas. He identifies himself as Jude. What makes his book so interesting is he says, I had planned on talking to you about this, but I changed my mind. And if you compare the book of Jude to the book of 2 Peter and chapter 2, they are almost word for word the same. Now that causes a lot of people a lot of grief because, well, who copied from who? Why does that even matter? They have similar sources, God, and there's similar examples, and the Gospels are similar oftentimes, and other parts of the Bible are very, very similar. But those two chapters are just too similar. We struggle with that. We shouldn't. Okay. Epistles. Remember what the epistles are for? They're to give us instruction and to motivate us. And we didn't even talk about Hebrews. We're going to talk about Hebrews next week. We've got to talk about Hebrews next week. Linda and some of her sisters in the church are studying Hebrews now, which is commendable that they're studying Hebrews. Maybe she can give us some insight next week on what it's all about. Okay. Thank you so much.